Thank God we're going to continue with our class on Esther. Up till now, any questions from our previous classes? Everything okay? Let's turn to Esther chapter 2. Esther chapter 2, verse 19 through 23. Esther chapter 2, verse 19 through 23. Let us ask Stephen Chu. You're Stephen Liu? Yeah, you're Stephen. And you are Liu. Okay. Stephen Chu, please read. 19 through 23. Here's a section that concludes chapter 2, talking about how Mordecai discovered a conspiracy against the king and informed Esther, and Esther is able to warn the king in time. Right. One thing I want to highlight in this section is verse 20. Verse 20 says, "Now Esther had not revealed her family and her people, just as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him." Okay. Here's talking about, you know, after Esther was queen, now she has a husband. Obviously, this situation also is not that normal because the king is a king of Persia, and then I'm sure he had many, many wives or concubines too. Okay, so anyway, it's a kind of a different situation. She may not even see him every day, right? But anyway, she was married. And it's very interesting, though. In verse 20, it mentions that Esther continued to obey the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him. Okay. So it tells us that this is something that we can talk a little bit about, even though maybe it's a little bit early for you guys. But I think just to have the right concept is good. In the future, when you are married, you still have your parents, and then you have your in-laws, right? Let's draw a diagram. That's an abbreviation you can use in the future when you text. My MIL is in town. Okay, so this is what happens. And then maybe you have what? Kids, right? Okay, so that's a very basic family tree. Now, when you get married, you, of course, are one with your spouse. Okay, but your spouse did not just drop down from the sky, right? Your spouse has a family. Your spouse also has parents. So you also need to honor his or her father and mother as your own. Okay, honor them too. However, your primary loyalty, your primary allegiance after marriage is to your spouse. to your spouse. Okay, so this is the main, this is what God has said is one body. Like, this is your main allegiance now. Before, like, you probably were very obedient and honorable to your parents. But once you get married, the dynamics change a little bit. Like, your parents may tell you to do stuff, but now they're not, you still love them and everything, but they're not your priority anymore. You understand? Now you have to consider what your spouse thinks. And you two make the decision. Okay? Because you're one body, you're the unit. Okay? And this can get pretty tricky. Okay? This can get pretty tricky. Especially for brothers. Brothers, I speak from my own experience, right? You have your wife that you love. You also have your mom that you love, that raised you. And then sometimes you can wind up getting caught in the middle, right? Because sometimes your mom and your wife, sometimes they love you, right? And then sometimes they may not completely agree on everything. They each have their own opinion on things. Okay, so what do you do? What do you do? What do you do in that case? Let's say your parents live nearby where you're married. Okay, in the same town, same area, and your parents say, "Hey, Sunday night, come over for dinner. Come over for dinner. Just bring the whole family. Come over for dinner." And then Sunday afternoon, let's say your wife suddenly has a headache. Okay. What do you do? Huh? Benny, huh? What do you do?
Huh?
Okay. What do you do? Timothy? Don't go. If you don't go, how would you tell your parents? That's what you would say? My wife's not feeling good? Huh? Yeah, it depends on the situation, okay? But a lot of times, sometimes if the relationship is new, if you like just got married, you don't want to present a negative image to your mom of your wife. Do you understand? Right? So you don't try not to put the blame on your wife. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, my wife got a headache. Right? It's not, even though it's the truth, you can try to curve. No, you can try to present a different face, right, to your mom. You can just say, "Oh, mom, we decided, No, you say something true, though. You say something true. I'm not saying make something up. Like, you say, "Oh, we decided not to go," or yeah, okay, or. Yeah, or tomorrow we have a long day of work, right? Which is true, right? And then, we're not gonna go tonight, okay? You know, so, yeah. But anyway, like, there's some skills that you eventually have to learn, okay? Some, yeah. How do you call it? Not just skills. It's like there's a word I'm looking for. There's some tact, right? Tact. I think is a good word. You have to learn to be tactful, and make sure that, of course, you don't ever want to allow your spouse to feel like you love your own parent more than them. Do you understand? Same thing with sisters. In the future, like, you're supposed to respect your husband, submit to your husband, but sometimes maybe you wind up more respectful, more submissive to your own dad than your own husband. And that's not cool either. Right? That's not cool. Okay. So, gotta be wise. Gotta be wise. Know your allegiance. Of course, you can never replace your mom, right? Of course, you can never replace your dad. Right? And they love you and you love them. But you are one body with your wife or you're with your husband. You understand? So this is a little bit different from some dynamics in Asian households. In Asian households, what happens? In typical Chinese culture, what happens? The husband marries in the wife. The wife basically is the daughter of the new family, right? And then what? The son listens to the parents for everything still. Do you understand? That's traditional Chinese. And then the wife has to go along. Right, wife is, you married into the family and you basically, you do everything. Which is true, like you should do your best to try to please your in-laws, okay? But as a son in that situation, you also need to be mindful if your wife is not happy for some reason or like does not agree with your parents for some reason, we have to be understanding and try to be tactful, right? And try to make sure everyone gets along. But ultimately, too, that your wife knows that you love her more than anyone, okay? So, yes, you still love your parents, but you love them a little less, right? A little bit less, okay? All right. Any questions? For here, for Esther and Mordecai's case, it's very interesting, right? This is not exactly one-to-one that I'm talking about, but still, Esther, of course, her kind of guardian from the past was Mordecai, and she still honored him. Right? She didn't have to. She now was married to the king, and like the king is the most powerful man in the empire. And in a way, she could just kind of do her own thing. But she was still very obedient, okay, and respectful to her former guardian, Mordecai. Okay. This is, I think, a good example. Yeah. Any thoughts, questions? Yeah, Mehmet. Yeah, in general, I think that's what the Bible tells us, right? We are only one flesh with your spouse. That's the most intimate relationship between human relationship is between you and your spouse. It's true though, like, I mean, you probably may be very close to your mom, maybe close to your dad, maybe very close, but still, no one is closer between, based on the Bible, between husband and wife. Even in the future, you have kids, you'd be very close to your kids. One day your kids are going to leave you. Okay, so don't forget that. Okay, so your relationship should be, don't forget about your spouse. Okay, so this reminds me of a picture, right? In the future, if you have kids, right? What's like? Okay, which picture is do you prefer? Huh? Which picture do you prefer? Family portrait. Ling Hao.
Okay, there are a number of them, right? Maybe I get a survey.
How many of you think number one? Number one's good. Number one? Okay. Good. Okay, hands down. How many of us feel number two's good? Okay, hands down. How many feel number three is good? Okay.
Three is better. I mean, two is better.
Two is better? Okay. This is my point, okay? My point is this. The most intimate relationship between humans from the Bible's point of view is husband and wife. So for me, this is the best. Okay? Because you should not, right? You should, I mean, here, of course, I mean, sometimes we might walk like this too, okay? No problem. But just saying, like, from a symbolic point of view, right? This is the core of the family, okay? You don't put, the kids are not the core of the family. Kids are not the core of the family, even though you love them, right? From the Bible's point of view, it's the husband and the wife is the core. They're one body. Children are not one body with you, right? Even though they came from you. So going back to Manvi's question, you asked what? Is it always spouse over family? Yeah, it depends on the situation, but yes. Okay, that reminds me now. Yes, spouse over family. But let's say your spouse is wrong. Okay, let's say your spouse is wrong in a particular situation. Before your family, you still don't, present the wrong side. You just, publicly, you always side with your spouse. Privately, then you let him or her know, hey, this was not good. Next time you got to do this, right? Do this or that, okay? Do you know what I mean? All right, so publicly, you and your spouse are like one, okay? And then, so like I would not like correct my wife in front of my parents. Do you know what I mean? Even if, yeah, that's something that I wouldn't do, right? But maybe privately, then I would say, hey, next time, this is something we can do better. This is something you can do better. Yeah. Do you understand? Is that how, what do you guys think, sisters? Okay, in the future, you'll probably run into it. Okay, maybe 10 years from now or less. Maybe less. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. This little small section from verse 19 to 23 is for kind of a little bit of information that's going to come back into the story in chapter 6. Right, where, and this is all like God's arrangement too. Like, just so happened that when Mordecai discovered this plot here, the king didn't do anything. The king didn't reward him or anything, but it was still recorded in the chronicle. So it was a historical record. Esther mentioned Mordecai by name. Mordecai's name was put in there, but for some reason, the king didn't do anything for saving his life at this point in time. But later on, the king just so happens cannot sleep, is reading through some history books, because history books usually put people to sleep. I don't know. I like history. No, I'm just kidding. and then he then honors Mordecai, and that becomes part of Haman's downfall. Okay, part of Haman's down, because the king asked Haman, how should he honor a man who does this and this and that, right? And then it turns out Haman was thinking about himself. Actually, the king was thinking about Mordecai. Okay. So anyway, that's a little bit later on. Okay. So God is starting to put things in place a bit. Any questions on chapter 2? Okay, let's go to chapter 3. Chapter 3 from verses 1 through... Okay, yeah, I think we put the look at the whole chapter together. But this whole chapter is basically now talking about Haman. It's another character. Another character. And how he eventually plots to kill the Jews. Let's read verses 1 through... 6. This is like the origin story of Haman and how he begins to want to kill all the Jews. Esther 3, verses 1 through 6. Okay, Michelle. Yeah, all six verses. Okay, amen. Just want to double check this pronunciation. I don't know how to pronounce this either. Let's see.
Homage.
Homage, okay. Homage. Here we see Haman for the first time in the book of Esther. He was promoted. And what is his background? What kind of person is he? Where does he come from?
A what?
An Agagite, yeah.
And typically how this is interpreted is, do you guys know what an Agagite is? Or Agag? Do you remember Agag? Anybody recognize this name? Angela. He was a king. Yeah, of whom? Of what people? Yeah, he was a king. Let's turn to 1 Samuel chapter 15. 1 Samuel chapter 15. Verse 8. 1 Kings chapter 15, verse 8. Jahal. 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 8. The Amalekites. Verse 9. Okay, you can stop right there. So,
Agag was the king of the Amalekites.
So, I think most people think that Haman, because he's called an Agagite, is also related. He's basically related to the Amalekite people, right? Even though many, many centuries had passed since this particular event, and maybe they were called different names or whatnot, okay? But at this time, he's called an Agagite. I think it's reasonable to associate that with Amalekites. Very interesting is that in 1 Samuel chapter 15, we have what? Agag versus Saul. Agag is what? Saul, which tribe is he from? Benjamin. Yep, Benjamin. And here, centuries later, we have Haman versus Mordecai. And Haman, who's an Agagite, I guess we just say is also from Amalek. And what tribe is Mordecai from?
Benjamin.
I think it's an interesting connection. Okay, let's go back to Esther chapter 3, verse 2. Okay, so Haman is promoted. Verse 2 says that all the servants of the king who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage. Is it homage?
Homage
to Haman. So how did they pay homage? Usually it'd be like a gesture of bowing. Okay, of bowing. But in verse 2, it specifically mentions that Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. Anybody know why? Commandment. Second commandment? What is the second commandment? You should not bow down to what? Gods? Okay. Yeah. That's what I originally thought, but there's also some evidence, right, in the Bible. If you look at, let's look at a few examples, right? Let's look at Genesis chapter 33, verse 3. Genesis chapter 33, verse 3. Monica. Okay, this is talking about Jacob meeting Esau after many, many years. What did he do? He bowed himself to the ground 7 times. Let's go to another example. Genesis chapter 42, verse 6. Genesis 42, verse 6. Paul. Okay, this is like the fulfillment of Joseph's dream, where his brothers came to him and bowed down to him. So you can see that the Jews here in Genesis, had no problem bowing down to another human. You may think that, oh, this is before the Ten Commandments. Let's also turn to 1 Samuel chapter 20. 1 Samuel chapter 20. First Samuel chapter 20, verse 41. First Samuel chapter 20, verse 41, Stephen Liu. Okay, this is talking about David's reunion with Jonathan. And what did he do? He bowed down three times to Jonathan. Okay, let's also read 1 Samuel chapter 24. 1 Samuel chapter 24, verse 8. Jenny, 1 Samuel 24, verse 8. Okay, so David bowed down to Saul, the king. So my understanding is that Jews didn't have a problem, based on these verses, bowing down to other people. Right, especially if they were in positions of power. So then when we go back to Esther chapter 3, how come Mordecai didn't bow down or pay homage to Haman? Originally, I also thought maybe it's related to the second commandment, but I think here we don't really know why. Okay, we don't really know why. Maybe it's related to this, right? Because there was, if you look in the Old Testament, if you read Exodus chapter 17, verse 16, Exodus chapter 17, verse 16, chapter 17, verse 16. Okay, this is what was declared after the Battle of Rephidim. This is that famous battle where Moses is on the mountain and then he had two of his buddies hold his hands up to pray. Do you remember? And then when the hands were down, then they would be losing. When the hands were up, then they would have victory. So in the end, this is their fight with Amalek. Right? And the Amalek, God told them, you will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. So I think maybe just like the Jews just did not respect these enemies who attacked them in the wilderness. Okay, so maybe that type of animosity carried out even to Mordecai and Haman's day. And then so Mordecai would not bow down to him. Okay. That's just something to think about. Yeah, I don't know for sure. I really don't know for sure. Okay, any questions? Any questions? Okay. Going back to Esther chapter 3. In verse 4, here you can see the king's servants will always ask Mordecai, why do you transgress the king's command? Why do you not pay homage to Haman? And then every day, Mordecai would say the same thing, and Mordecai would tell them that he was a Jew. Right, that's verse 4. He was a Jew. Okay. So I think that also is consistent maybe with this. Right, that Haman's from an Agagite, who is probably, that means Amalekite. And then the Jews were with perpetual war with the Amalekites from generation to generation. Okay. Okay, so one day, verse 5, Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay homage to him, he was filled with wrath. And then verse 6, he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai. So these other officers were influencing Haman. Haman originally was probably just wanting to harm Mordecai, but then the other people were telling Haman about these people that Mordecai comes from, these Jews, and like their practices and maybe their beliefs, their God, their feast that they hold. And in the end, Haman became so hateful towards the Jews, he sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole Persian kingdom, the people of Mordecai. So this is where you can see Haman, since he was in a position of power, you know, this power he used in a very destructive ways. Okay? His power corrupted him. Okay. So in verse 7, it says, in the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast pur, that is, the lot, before Haman to determine the day and the month until it fell on the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Okay. This is an important verse to kind of just know, because this is related to the feast that eventually came out of this whole situation called Purim. Purim. Purim comes from pure.
Pure is singular. And then if you add an im, it becomes
plural. Okay? So in Hebrew words, when you see an im, that's plural, usually. For example, cherubim. Cherubim, that's actually many cherubs. Right? Seraph is one. Seraphim. Seraphim is multiple. Okay, so pure and then purim. That's the relationship. We can jump ahead to chapter 9, Esther chapter 9, verse 26. Esther chapter 9, verse 26. Vivian. Okay, you can stop, yeah. All right, so the first sentence is what we're interested here. They called these days Purim, the days that they were feasting after that, the day that was originally supposed to be used to commit this massacre of the Jews. And they named it after Pur, which means lot. Okay, so Purim means basically lots. Any questions? Okay, let's go back to Esther chapter 3. From verse 8 to 15, this is when Haman allows his hatred to go from his heart to his mouth and then now into law, so that eventually action was going to be taken against the Jews. So Haman basically is able to persuade the king. There's a certain type of people scattered and dispersed among the people. Their laws are different. They don't keep the king's laws. It's not fitting for the king to let them remain. If it pleases the king, please write a decree that they are destroyed. And then I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who do the work to bring it into the king's treasuries. So the king, not very Yeah, basically, just didn't really scrutinize the whole plan and just allowed Haman's plan to be put into law. Okay, so in verse 10, the signet ring was given to Haman, and the money was given to him. Then they started to write the law out and seal it, and I think they also translated it, right? A copy of the document was issued in the whole kingdom. So what was it? What was the appointed day? They casted the lot. The day that was going to occur is the 12th month, the 13th day. 12th month, 13th day. If you have interest, you can also look into the Hebrew calendar. Hebrew calendar is different than our calendar now. But the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, this would be around February, March, I think. February, March. Let's see. Let's see when Purim was celebrated. Okay. Okay, Google. When was Purim celebrated?
Purim began in the evening of Wednesday, March 23rd, 2016, and ended
okay.
in the evening of Thursday.
So this year, it was celebrated March 23rd, March 24th. So it's February, March is the month of Adar. Okay. March, so maybe more March. Maybe more March than February. Okay. Any questions on chapter 3? I think this part's pretty straightforward. We should probably move on, right? When you read verse 15, it's also kind of interesting. It says, so the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. Okay. It's a very stark contrast. The king and Haman, very cozy, very comfortable, but the citadel, the city where probably most people lived in the Persian Empire, they were very confused. What's going on? How come there's this such a law? Let's move on to Esther chapter 4. Esther chapter 4. This is probably like the most famous chapter of Esther because this is a turning point in Esther's life and faith. And it's also a good chapter that we can study and learn from for ourselves. To me, I think you can apply this chapter to when we are asked to serve God in some way. Okay, so what we see is first in this chapter, when you read it, you first see okay, let's read Esther chapter 4. I think we know most of this part, the beginning part, so let's just jump to verse 8. Let's jump to verse 8. Esther chapter 4, verse 8, and read onward. Mark. Yeah, maybe read 8 to 12. Okay, all right. So this is Esther was made known of the decree by Mordecai. She even received a copy of the decree through this eunuch. And what was Esther's response? Esther's response at first was very hesitant, right? She was telling Mordecai about the Persian law, which is that if the king did not summon a person and you just show up there, is very, very risky. Okay, because if he does not hold out his golden scepter, then you will basically die. You basically have offended him. He did not want your presence and you came and you would just die. But if, and then in the off chance that he does hold out the golden scepter, then the person can live. Right? So what Esther's first response is typical of, I think, all of us as humans, right? Whenever there's a challenge, a task at hand, we may often hesitate, right? Because we think of all the possible things that can go wrong. We think about the challenges. We think about the risks, okay? And because of all those thoughts in our mind, we justify inaction. Right? We justify inaction. Okay. So, especially you guys are now in high school, you're growing older. I think you'll also see in your local churches, the church perhaps may ask you in the future to participate more in certain tasks. And, you know, just kind of observe your own response, right? Or your friends' responses. In general, most people will just say, no, not me. No, right, not me. Right, and then they'll come up with a lot of reasons thinking about why they shouldn't be asked to do it. I'm young. I have no experience. I don't know what I'm doing. Right, I have no talent. I have no gift, etc. Okay, so a lot of times we like to justify inaction. We like to be like Esther, maybe think we're in a special circumstance, right? Esther herself maybe thought, you know, I'm the queen, so I can be excused from this particular situation. Right? So human nature is to seek comfort and be in a comfortable place. I see this here in America. I see this in any country I go to, right? That's just who we are. Human nature, we just like to cling to comfort. Okay. I'm not sure if I told this story, but a year and a half ago, I was in Malawi in Africa, and we had these two brothers who was accompanying us to one of the main cities in the country. They were from the countryside. They were farmers. And it seemed like they really seldom went to the city, so they were very very simple people, right? They only had like a cell phone, but at home, it seemed like they had never really seen a lot of advanced technology. But so anyway, we were in a city, and we were staying at a lodge. This lodge happened to have a TV, and that day we were making plans, so we didn't really go out that day, or like maybe some plans didn't work out. I forgot what happened. And anyway, I was staying with these two African brothers in one room, and then the UK preacher and another volunteer was staying in another room. And I saw that they turned on the TV, and then just started to watch. Like they're fascinated. And at that time, it was around Chinese New Year, so I think maybe some Chinese, there's like kind of Chinese government people went to Malawi, and then they were doing some kind of special Chinese New Year presentation. And to me, that program, whatever they were watching, it was really, really boring. Okay, really, really boring. Like the Chinese people were doing some kind of a folk dance or whatever, but you know, the production quality is just like one camera angle, right? Maybe two, okay, I forgot. Anyway, it was like really, really boring. And I walked out and I went to the preacher and the other volunteers' room to just talk with them and chat. About like an hour or two later, I went back to our room. I saw them just still like lounging there watching this program there, right? And I forgot exactly what happened, but basically I was just, you know, I think... basically, eventually, like we turned off the TV, and these two African brothers were asking me, "Hey, brother, is it right for us to watch TV? Is it okay for us to watch TV?" And then I was telling them, "Well, actually, it's not a matter of whether it's right or wrong, right? It's really just look at what the TV has done to you, right?" You came here and you started watching TV and 4 hours passed and you're just lazy. Originally, maybe they're sitting like this, and then by the end they're all like like this. So, and then they were listening. Thank God, they're very very simple and they're very submissive, and eventually they made their own conclusion. They're like, "Okay, we're gonna make the decision. We will not watch TV. We will you know, we know what you mean." Okay. So, yeah, that's just a small illustration of just what human nature is. I mean, I was like that too. Now I don't own a TV, but like in college we had a TV. Yeah, college we had a TV. And sometimes you just wind up wasting all day in front of the TV, right? Many, many hours. Nowadays it's with the computers. Computer, sometimes you can wind up watching online videos like well late into the evening, right? Past the time you should be sleeping. So human nature is to seek this type of comfort and to be in a comfortable place. Okay? But the thing is that we have to learn, time is coming up, but we'll learn as we study the rest of this chapter is that especially when you're faced with a decision, important decision, especially to serve God in some way, we have to be willing to step out and shine the light. Okay? Sometimes we will rather just choose the easier path, right? You see visitors come to the church. It's easier just to stay with your own group and not greet any visitors. It's easier to... like maybe some of us are bilingual, but we don't speak Mandarin. Let's just say Mandarin Chinese as well, right? And it's easier, like when we see somebody who's just a Chinese speaker, to just stick with the English-speaking people, right? And not want to put ourselves out there to try to help a Chinese visitor feel welcome. Right? There's a lot of ways where we wind up choosing easy things, okay, because it's just more comfortable. But hopefully we can learn that we should often choose the thing that's right in the eyes of God, even if it's hard, even if it's hard, right? Do the hard thing. Don't just aim for an easy life and a life of ease, okay? Because that life actually will not be very meaningful, right? It won't be that meaningful. But if you choose the difficult path, especially to do the will of God, glorify God. Yes, maybe it really is tough, maybe you really did have to put yourself out there. You're an introvert. You don't like to talk to people. And you're very nervous talking to that person, right? Or maybe you made some mistakes speaking the second language, right? But guess what? God is pleased with your efforts that you're willing to do, right? That of how you're willing to put yourself out there. Right? Keep that in mind. We'll continue with chapter 4 tomorrow. Okay? Let's bow our heads in prayer and silence.